there's times when you'll get on our team plane after a game. So we'll play, you know, 7 to whatever, 9:30, mm-hmm. and then we'll hit the airport and we'll fly into another city.
Oh, that's
so we're taking off at 11 p.m. or so, maybe 11:30.
Holy crap.
And you'll look on our team plane and every guy is like, you know, either phone up to their face, computer screen, or whatever it may be, you know, watching a movie, texting, playing a game, whatever it is. And this is like, you know, 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m. And, you know, I do the night shift and all that. But at the same time, you know, it's we're forced to be up at hours that we shouldn't be up, and we're forced to eat at hours that we shouldn't be eating, so...
State of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day looks back to about 50 years ago, and scientists thought they figured out why geckos had sticky feet. It turns out they were sort of right. In 1969, a scanning electron microscope, some of that big evil technology, revealed chevron-shaped pads on the lizard's toe that had these brush-like structures called setae. And they had little tiny suction cups on them, which helped lizards do things that no human can possibly do. Well, it turns out gecko feet don't really have suction cups, but each of the 4 feet have enough tiny setae, nearly 500,000, to increase adhesion via something called van der Waals forces, which are really weak forces between molecules. So those little hair-like things create enough adhesive force together so that they can stick to slick surfaces. So there you have it, an example of something where we knew exactly how it worked since 1969, except we were damned wrong. And this sort of thing happens over and over in science. So here's the thing. We know that geckos can climb up glass. And we think we know why. And we probably know why, but there may be another thing to learn. For instance, that van der Waals forces are involved. So what does that mean for you? Don't be too wedded to that idea that if something can't work, therefore it doesn't. That is dogma. Be curious and observe. And anytime you see an observation that doesn't do what you think, it doesn't require extraordinary evidence. That's also bad science. What it requires is curiosity and testing. And that's where all the cool biohacks are to be found, where all the new things in science, all the new advantages in a sport, they come from noticing little things that didn't match our pattern. We are wired to ignore, degrade, and insult things that don't match our pattern. Stop that crap. It's not good for you, and it's not good for science. Well, I finally found a guest who has bigger shoes than me. I'm a size 16, and our guest today has size 17. So thank goodness I'm not in the ugly shoe club. Oh, wait. I am in the ugly shoe club. We all are when we have big feet. I'm talking about none other than a very, very well-known athlete and just a great human being named Blake Griffin. He's a power forward for Detroit Pistons, a 6-time NBA All-Star and former LA Clipper, and pretty much a badass of basketball is a good way to describe it. So if you're a sports fan, you know who he is. If you're not a sports fan, you probably don't care about all his achievements. And if I read them all to you, you would say, wow, this guy's awesome. And he actually is. So, Blake, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk to you because you know what it's like being on the show, but you're also 2019 Forbes 30 Under 30. You're into health and wellness. Mm-hmm. You're an entrepreneur. Like, you're a renaissance guy, which is really cool. And you're also doing it. A lot of guys in your field, okay, you're 40, you're 50, you get into business, but sure. You know, you're 30 and you're cranking some stuff out that's pretty cool. So I want to just pick your mind, pick your brain, talk about health and wellness, and also want to talk about your new show, because you just are coming out with a show. I'm mm-hmm. not sure by the time we put this show out whether your show will even be out there, but I was just a guest on your new show. Tell me about its name here.
So I basically started this new show for me, and we actually haven't even fully landed on our exact name that we like. That's the beauty of recording a lot of episodes before it airs. But I've always been curious in health. I was a health and exercise science major in college. I grew up in a time in Oklahoma where not very many people are healthy. No one really cared about any of that stuff. And my mom actually did. She would read nutrition books. She would cook for us every night. My brother and I both would drink a powder called barley green.
Oh yeah. I remember that stuff. Yeah.
And this was back in like the mid 90s, early and mid 90s in Oklahoma. I keep saying that.
Because, no one would have done that. Did people beat you up for drinking that?
I definitely, my friends definitely thought differently of me after they left the house and spent the night for the first time. But you know, I say all that because it's been a part of my life, and it also wasn't something that was really forced on me. The barley green, I guess, was, but now I'm so appreciative of it because I just naturally enjoy healthy things. And I think some people don't believe that that's a possibility, but I actually do. And I've always had this interest in it. So I decided to do a show where I interview the most interesting people in health and wellness. That's why I had you on. That's why I've had several other people on. That's why I'll continue to do this, because I just generally enjoy talking to people who know more than the average person when it comes to health and wellness.
That's the dirty secret about podcasting, is it gives you an excuse to talk to cool people who've done big things and ask them what's going on.
Right.
And likewise, that's why I'm like, all right, I want to pick your brain here. Right. Because I look at what I was doing when I was, you know, under 30. I was not taking care of my health. Not nearly the way I should have been, but I was all about, you know, my career. And I look at what you've done. I mean, you started out, you're actually a baseball player, right? And someone told you you were too tall for that or something? I don't know.
I played all sports, really, to be honest. And basketball just kind of, I grew to be 6'6 when I was like 14.
So you were kind of built for it.
Let's just do basketball.
All right. So you went into that. But you somehow managed to just be like, it's a crazy record in the NBA. That's very, very impressive. But at the same time, like, all right, I'm going to go start businesses, and I'm going to do these other things. How do you manage to have the training time in order to be at the very, very top of your game and then do this other stuff? Like, where does it come from?
For me personally, I made a sort of a promise to myself, like, early on in my career that nothing was going to come before training for basketball, because it's the reason that I'm here, and it's the reason that I have all these opportunities. So I do all my training as soon as I wake up. I wake up, I eat breakfast, and I start training. So I find time to do all these things after I'm done training. And in the off season, when we do have time to go do things like this and have other interests, I just feel better when I'm busier. You know what I mean? Okay. So if I have like a free afternoon, I might lay around, I might watch TV. I don't know what I'm going to do. And that's what I don't like. You know, when I have a full scheduled afternoon and I have to do this, and this, I feel like a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day. And then when I'm done with that stuff, I can still go for an hour and I feel like I can get things done, because now my brain is just working in that pattern. So that's sort of how I got into doing all this in the first place.
Who schedules your time? I mean, you're saying you like to keep busy. Do you have like an assistant who figures all your stuff out for you?
It's a full team. I have my manager and also my assistant, who kind of sort of share responsibilities. You know, during the season, it's such a different thing. During the season, our schedule is so dependent on our actual NBA schedule, our practice schedule, you know, our coaches schedule that. So once I get to the off season, I'm kind of like, yes, I get to just like knock out some of this stuff. But then on the flip side, also by the end of every offseason, I'm like, all right, I need to get back to this structure of basketball and all this. So I use my assistant, like I said, I use my manager, myself a little bit too. You know, if I'm talking with somebody and I want to take a meeting with somebody, I send that off to my assistant, my manager, and we make sure that's in the books. And then I get a rundown from my assistant every night, you know, of the day coming up. And
so you don't stay busy staying busy. And like, there's such an overhead, and I'm the same way. Could we fill up every minute with something that was more valuable than the minute I spent on it?
Right.
And it, for me, like, am I available at the time? Hey, what time can we have lunch? And calling back and forth five times, it makes me want to stab myself in the eye with a pencil.
Delegate.
Are you kind of the same way?
Yeah, and I've learned to be better over time, but delegating responsibility and delegating, you know, things that I don't necessarily have to be on is very important for me. So
let's stop for a second there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm speaking from the perspective of, you know, someone in his mid-40s. I got, you know, 50% more wear on my tread than you do, right? Because you're 30, right? So when I was 30, I totally didn't trust anyone. I was like, I'm not going to delegate. I got to do all this stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm a real man, you know? How did you learn to delegate?
I just learned my lesson. I would forget things. I would remember an hour before a meeting and panic and be like, oh, I have to go do this, you know? So I finally learned to, like, just let go of some of the things that I'm not necessarily great at planning out my
job. Oh, I suck
at
calendaring.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it wasn't a strength for you.
No, not at all. And I just realized, I'm also one of those people that, you know, I like to see what's going on. I like to know everything. So I had to learn to be able to, you know, I'm going to put my assistant and I'm going to put this person on email and they're going to figure it out. And then my assistant's going to say, hey, we locked it in for this time. And then again, like I said, she's going to remind me the night before. And that alone is a huge thing for me because I now spend less time having to plan this thing. And then I don't have to spend time even the night before going to my calendar, looking through everything. I just get a rundown of my important stuff and I don't have to skim over or skip over anything else that's in there.
So when you're on your off season, you got to take care of your nutrition, supplementation, like speed training, strength training, injury stuff, getting quality sleep. Do you set those priorities with your assistant or your manager and they like slot them into your calendar? Like, how do you actually do this? Because everyone listening who isn't a pro athlete, they also have that same thing, but their off season and their on season are more mixed than you. So I want to know, you, very top of your game, how do you keep that stuff straight when you got everything else going on?
So for me, I'm fortunate to have a really great team around me.
It's your team.
You know, people aren't always able to have all these things, but, you know, I have to invest in all of these things. And some of it is the team we play for, you know, it's part of it. So, you know, I have my strength coach. I have my trainer who actually go hand in hand. They're one and the same. So that knocks out something right there. I have my chef. Our team has nutritionists. Our team has dietitians. So
even in the off season, you're totally set there.
You're able to use these year round.
So you're kind of spoiled on
I'm
that.
I'm very, 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 right. very, very spoiled. But, you know, when I fit retire playing, I will reconfigure this whole situation. I obviously won't have to train for 4 hours a day.
Yeah, that helps.
You know what I mean? So that's going to save me a lot of time. And I'll still work out, but it'll look much, much different.
The reason I'm asking in that much detail is I have this weird problem where I have an upgrade labs in my house. Like I have all this gear. I don't have time to use all the gear.
Right.
And I have similar goals, right? You know, I want to manage my sleep and I've gotten to really, really improve that with Superhuman, the new book, some of the stuff in there. Just all the recovery stuff. I have someone who now, I have a spreadsheet for my supplements and I'm pretty sure I'm going to put some of the supplements out there that I take that I've been a little concerned about talking about on the new Dave Asprey blog. But I have someone who helps me put them in bags because I just realized I'm spending too much time on that stuff. Right. And maybe, you know, you can have your kids do it or whatever. Like there's different, different ways people can get help with that. But I still find that I'm struggling with discipline and you have to have discipline to have the record that you have. So you got somehow your self-motivated exercise. We also have people putting that on your calendar but all those other, the little details, like how to take your vitamins, and all that sort of stuff. Your team does all this stuff for you? Or are you?
So I just started a thing last year where I'm now taking all my supplements in powder form, except for fish oil.
Okay. Yeah, that tastes pretty gross in powder form.
Exactly. So that has kind of helped me because I now have these pods where I take an AM and I take a PM. And I was getting up to the point where I was taking probably 40.
Yeah, I do 150 pills a day, so I'm with you, right?
You know what I mean? And you obviously know that's like, it's sometimes it's a struggle. You know what I mean? It's not always like, oh, you just pop them in and you drink some water and it's good. So that has helped me now be able to sort of streamline that process. So my chef normally takes care of everything nutrition, right? So anything that has to do with supplements or anything like that, he's making sure he stays on top of that. He communicates directly with, you know, our nutritionist. So that's like, you know, part of it that's gone into this whole team of people. Everybody has a responsibility. And you know, to this day, I'm still tweaking and changing things. I'm saying, okay, we're going to try this season instead of this. And it's a constantly moving and changing process for me.
So you're evolving it and you have a lot of help with it. And so on all the supplement side like that, if you do everything right, how long do you think you can play before like it's going to get there? I mean, I've talked to guys from different fields who are playing 10, 20 years beyond than they're supposed to. Like the Bryan brothers in tennis, you know, they're way older than they're supposed to be, and they're killing it, right? Are you going to be one of those?
I want to, yeah. I also have this thing where I don't know that I can be one of the older guys that sits at the end of the bench. I have such a competitive fire that I'm not sure I can see myself getting to that point. But I mean, you're seeing it today. You're seeing guys are now taking so much better care of their bodies. And just the big one thing, ice alone. Guys started icing, I would say, like in the early 2000s maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be off on that. I wasn't in the NBA then. But just doing something as simple as that has now allowed guys to play longer and longer and longer. And guys are figuring out that it's not all about, you know, just doing this squat or this doing this exercise. But it's a whole gamut of things that you have to do to be able to play that long. So, yeah, I mean, I think I can play to 38 for sure. Okay. And you know, I'm hesitant to say further than that because you just don't know how your body's going to feel.
Sure. At a certain point, like, you don't really know. I say 180 for my age because I'm doing basic math on what I know we can do.
Right.
But I may change my mind when I'm 150. Just be like, right. You know what? I'm growing, you know, an extra elbow out of my forehead, and I'm not okay with this. I'm out. You know, right. It could happen, right?
Right.
So, but you think you're going to be able to sustain because you started young and mm-hmm. your mom got you going mm-hmm. on the green stuff early on, and so okay, you're going to do that. I'm a little bit curious, though. I know because we've talked. I'm not sure all the stuff you're allowed to talk about, but you do some pretty heavy-duty recovery technologies, a lot of stuff mm-hmm. that I do. So what are the kind of things that you've done that maybe would be in the realm of biohacking?
Well, I have a hyperbaric chamber.
All right. Score one for that. I love this. How do you use it?
I use it mostly during the season, and the season I used it the most, since we go on the road, I couldn't take it with me on the road. But when I'm at home, I tried to use it at least 30 minutes a day.
Wow.
Some okay. days I used to take my pregame naps in there.
Okay.
So I would get in, zip up, take my iPad, watch my film, fall asleep. So I've done that. I have hot tub, cold tub at the house. I have a infrared sauna. I have the infrared bed where you lay on it.
Nice.
What else? I mean, I do cryotherapy. Our facilities have cryotherapy. I have the Normatec boots, the recovery boots.
Okay. You have a little mini biohacking lab there.
Yeah, I mean, I have like a solid, now I have a solid buildup. And actually, one of my favorite things that I did last season for the first time was use BFR, blood flow restriction, as a recovery technique and not just for lifting.
Interesting.
So I would just do passive BFR for 5 minutes, three sets of 5 minutes. So it'd be 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 5 minutes on for three times. And I found that that was very beneficial in my recovery. It not only boosts natural human growth hormone, but it just, it flushes the legs and help my legs feel better throughout the course of the season. Last year, I played the most minutes I'd played since my first year.
Dang.
You know, and this is 9 years in.
So you're increasing your VEGF and nitric oxide. And
exactly.
Yeah, there's so much going on. And you look at things like KAATSU, which has been around since the beginning of the Bulletproof blog, the mm-hmm. blood flow restriction with specific pressures and all that. Mm-hmm. But it looks like just the basic restriction there is causing huge improvements in vascular performance. So for you, that's a recovery tack.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
I mean, I still use it, you know, as a active like lifting tool, but we're not able to really lift that much during the season. You know, it's more during the season, strength training is more about maintaining than it is building.
Okay.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy, specifically more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that LeelaQ's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. LeelaQ has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use LeelaQ for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices.
ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
How do you keep your mind working?
I have a very, very active imagination. And I feel like I have one of those minds that's just kind of always going. But I enjoy that. I love to be like in my own thoughts. So for me, during the season, it's sort of tough because you're always in a hotel room. You're always on a bus. You're always on a plane, or you're in the gym and you're, you know, locked into whatever you're doing. So for me, I have to give myself little breaks because of how much we're focused on basketball, focused on film, whatever it may be. I have to give myself little breaks here and there.
What does a little break look like?
A little break looks like me sitting down and doing BFR for, it would be 25 minutes basically, and zoning out and watching one of my favorite shows.
What's your favorite show?
The Office.
Okay, nice.
But I've seen every episode 1,000 times, so it's not so much about me sitting there and being like locked in. It's just about me like taking a 25-minute break and being able to just, you know,
just let your mind water,
vegetate a little bit.
Okay.
So little breaks like that during the season help me because we play 82 games, and on game days, I don't really have that much time to sit and just like think and be doing all this stuff. I'm either in the morning, I'm waking up, I'm working with my trainer, I'm eating breakfast, I'm going to the gym, I'm starting my routine as far as lifting and all that stuff goes. Then we're in the film room, then we're on the court walking through all these plays. Afterwards, I'm doing my hot cold tub contrast. I'm going home, I'm eating, I'm watching film, I'm taking a nap, I'm waking up, I'm getting dressed, I'm going to the game, and I have a whole routine once I get to the game. So there's not a lot of time in there,
right,
for me to like wander or do all the things that I kind of love doing on it, as far as my mind goes. So when we're not playing, I have to have these little things that kind of keep me fresh.
Nick Foles walked through his travel regimen, mm-hmm, when he came on the show.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to stay strong before you get on an airplane? When you get off an airplane in air, because you fly a lot with, mm-hmm, 82 games. Mm-hmm. What's your secret?
So before, I always take my meal. I never eat the airplane food.
Good man, yeah.
I always take my food because a lot of times they'll heat it in like the stove and overheat it, and I don't use microwaves.
Yep, me either.
So that's big for me, is taking my own food. My next thing that I do once I get on the airplane, before we take off, I have these things called Fireflies. And it's just basically pulse technology.
Oh, yeah, little electrical stems.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a pair of those, yeah.
So I wear those
when you fly,
on every flight,
instead of compression pants.
Sometimes I'll do compression pants over the top. So okay, during the season, a lot of times I'll have compression sleeves, and I'll put the Firefly on, and I'll hold it on, because the Fireflies come with like a strap. So I'll hold it on with compression sleeves.
That's kind of cool. And if you're listening to this and you've never heard of a Firefly, it's a small electrical stimulator that goes on your lower leg,
mm-hmm,
and like kind of outside of your shin. And it's shown in clinical studies to reduce swelling in the legs.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, using electricity and compression, and sometimes just electricity. All, mm-hmm, right, that's different. I've never flown with that other than one time when I was playing with it.
I love it, and I, okay, use it all season, pretty much every flight. The only time like I won't use it if I like turn it on and I like go to sleep and it happens to turn off while I'm asleep, you know, okay, or like you run out of battery.
So you
only
have
like 20 hours. So
okay,
I do that almost every single flight. As soon as we get to the hotel, I schedule with our deep tissue,
massage
therapist, okay, and we kind of try to go through the whole body. And then once I do that, I kind of take a break. I'll normally grab food.
What do you eat on the road?
I eat basically, unless we're in a city where I really know, you know, the ins and the outs of what's around me and stuff, I'll just do room service.
Okay.
So during the season, I don't really do dairy. I don't do gluten. So I'm normally, you know, choosing from whatever they have on the road. And now it's pretty easy to do that pretty much everywhere,
yeah,
which is great. And the team helps us out a little bit with, you know, doing some custom menus if it's,
okay,
it's not that great a hotel. But that's my sort of travel routine from once I'm heading to the plane to, you know, at night when I'm ready to go to sleep.
Okay. Do you do anything with noise canceling headphones, baseball hats, sunglasses, blankets, jackets, anything like that?
I don't do. I've done the sunglasses, especially late at night. A lot of times if we're flying during the day, I don't do the glasses. Okay. But our team carries the blue light emitting glasses. Okay.
They might be the ones I make. I'm not sure. We got to deal.
They
with
might
some
be.
Teams.
I didn't.
It's okay.
But we'll look into it.
If I'll send you some if you want. There's a bunch of sports teams who are using them.
Because for us, you know,
just that they're giving you some kind of light control for that's noteworthy and it's super new, right? And
I think we've had it for the past couple of years at least.
That's still in the overall scheme of things to get an advantage. I think that's part of being a winning team.
Because there's times when you'll get on our team playing after a game. So we'll play, 7 to whatever, 9:30, and then we'll hit the airport and we're flying to another city.
Oh, that's
so
brutal.
We're taking off at 11 p.m. or so, maybe 11:30.
Crap.
And you'll look on our team plane and every guy is like, either phone up to their face, computer screen, or whatever it may be, watching a movie, texting, playing a game, whatever it is. And this is like, 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m. And, I do the night shift and all that. But at the same time, it's we're forced to be up at hours that we shouldn't be up. And we're forced to eat at hours that we shouldn't be eating. So finding a way to combat that is tough.
All right. That would knock me out if I did that for the kind of schedule you're on. I mean, I fly. I'm on the road 150 days of the year.
Right.
And I don't know. I probably fly a good 100+ times. In fact, I know that I do.
Yeah.
But I don't think I fly at the awful times you guys. I think you have the most brutal schedule I could think of. So I'm like, all right, you top your game, perform excellently with the worst travel schedule I can imagine. Mm-hmm. So you have to know all the little secrets.
Right.
What about hydration when you travel? What do you do?
I use some hydration pills, and I can't believe I'm going blank on the name of them right now, but I use those during games. I use those after games. I use them at all times. So
hydration pills, okay.
Hydration pills.
These are like little salt, electrolyte kind of things.
Yeah, you just drop them in, and that's the only thing I drink during games.
Okay.
So those help me, with the – and I'm one of those guys that sweats a lot. So I have to, really fight to get back just to zero.
Okay.
So it's a conscious thing. Every time I order room service, right when I get into the room, I forgot to say this, I'll call and order 4 of the large bottles of water, liter bottles of water. So
I've got a hack that you might like because you're an assistant. This is what I started doing. I say, look, when I get to the hotel – have a delivery for me. Because hotels, it takes them like a half hour to bring you 4 bottles of water, and then they charge you $20 a piece. So I'm like, all right, guys, here's the deal. I want a pack of blueberries, or I want my cold brew bulletproof, and I want 6 big bottles of Pellegrino. So can you have a package delivered? And then they'll order it on Amazon or Instacart or whatever. So then I get to my room, and the hotels are so awesome. They've already put it there. And, it's one thing. There's a few hotels now where I can, get my bulletproof in the fridge. The Beverly Hilton does that. I don't have to do that. But if I go to, an average hotel in the middle of wherever, I know I've got to have clean water because I don't really feel that good. And I know I could stay up a half hour later waiting for room service to deliver it.
Right.
Or I could just make sure it was there. So if there's food you like, all right, great. Pack my beef jerky or whatever. It's been actually really a half hour of productive time a day changer for me, and it actually is at least break even if it doesn't save money.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, you do some comedy stuff. That's pretty unusual. So why did you decide comedy on top of basketball?
I've always loved comedy. I just I grew up watching, a bunch of comedy shows with my dad and my brother, and it's just something that's always struck with me. Stand-up, comedy shows, whatever it is, movies, anything like that. So when I first moved to LA, I became friends with some guys who did stand up and are pretty prevalent on the scene. I became friends with a guy named Neil Brennan who co-created the Chappelle Show.
Nice.
Among other things, and now has, Netflix specials and all that. And I would just kind of go around with him and watch sets and just kind of be in that environment. And I don't know, I got offered, I was going to go up to the Just for Last Festival in Montreal and they offered it. They said, do you want to host a show? It was a small show, a small venue. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give it a try. So I went and wrote 10 minutes. hosted the show, did 10 to 12 minutes at the top every night and loved it. And the thing that I loved the most about it is I walked away with this new sense of accomplishment, but I also felt like I had this tool that I didn't have before I started. And now every summer I always try to do something that's out of my element and that's going to terrify me.
So that was the motivation, was something that was a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I love that. I've sought out all the things that scare me and done every single one of them for the same reason.
Yeah.
It's sort of part of evolving as a human.
But it's also something I really loved, and I always kind of pictured myself trying
wanted
to do that.
But it was scary.
Right.
You did it.
For sure.
Do you get scared? This blew me away, because as a non-athlete, I talked to Nick Foles, and he's like, there's guys like throwing up in the locker room before they go out on the field. Like people are really, some of them are really intimidated, you know, and he had his own thing. I mean, do you get scared before you go on the field?
No, not at all.
Do you, guys you play with? I mean, is there anxiety and stress?
I've definitely had teammates who have performance anxiety. Like they will be a different type of player in practice or in workouts when you're, you know, it's not like a game-like situation than they are in game-like situations. And it's crazy to watch, but I just don't personally have that. I feel like I'm better in games than I am if you came and watched me practice.
Okay.
Because it's the real thing, you know, like
the pressure
is on. I love that. I need that.
Interesting. And then for comedy, you're like, you have a little bit of pressure, a little bit of, I don't want to fail. And you go out there and then that lets you bring it.
It's the same thing to me. And it's not the same type of pressure really, because basketball is so like, it's what I do. I've done it my whole life. I can do that at any time of the day. Comedy is so lonely feeling. You're up on a stage by yourself, speaking to people, which by the way, public speaking is everyone's number one fear. And also you have to make them laugh. And not everybody wants to laugh all the time. You know what I mean? So you got to kind of navigate that.
I've been wanting to do that forever. Stand-up comedy. I live in a place where there's no stand-up comedy and I don't want to travel even away from my kids. Yeah. But so that's on my bucket list. So that's one of the reasons I'm asking about it. So you get great pleasure in doing that. You also do this weird comedy by Blake where you drive around in a cab. What's up with that? That sounds hilarious.
Well, that was that Comedy by Blake is my charity event that I do every year, and it's a stand-up event. And then this year I was in Montreal, actually. I partnered this year with Just for Laughs, so I went back, and we thought it'd be funny to basically like I was at Uber for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And I just drove people around. And
did they recognize you?
Some did, and it was also weird because I had to make them sit like in, you know, the two seats where the cameras were. They couldn't sit behind me, so you had to have this whole thing. But it was fun, man. It was really fun. But I don't always do that, but it was kind of like a thing that I did to promote the charity event.
Okay, so that's cool. What was the craziest thing that happened when you were riding around as an Uber driver? I think that's just hilarious. The idea of that.
Well, first of all, I didn't know where I was going. I was kind of doing, I would kind of like be in the same area where I'd do like kind of the same lap, you know. Nothing really crazy happened. Just trying to, you know, having a conversation with people who know nothing about basketball or, you know, Canadian, French Canadian, because there's so many French in Montreal. But it honestly, nothing really crazy happened. I think we kind of, you know, kept it short enough that it wasn't really too wild, but it was fun.
What kind of reviews did you get as a driver?
I honestly, we didn't have that type of feedback with our.
You didn't get 5-star reviews?
Well, I wasn't technically an Uber driver. It was like a
another service. Oh, okay.
It's a comedy festival, so you know, basically we had somebody saying like, "Hey, we got a free car service." Okay. Yeah, you know what I mean. So I wasn't able to get money.
Kind of like the sort of sneaky one. Where you
just, exactly. Like, I did. A couple of people said they would give me 5 stars, but you know.
All right, so you passed.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. One of the things that is also ridiculous about you, if I could just say this, it's like, oh yeah, so I'm kind of this big deal on the basketball court and a comedian, and you also decided that you'd become an actor.
A little bit.
So you're in the female brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why? like, you're like 30 under 30, you're doing these businesses, you're a comedian. Like, are you a masochist? Like,
This one was, so I started doing commercials early on and I really enjoyed doing comedy. You know what I mean?
Okay.
My stipulation when I would do these commercials for most of my endorsement deals was like, it has to be funny. And then I started slowly getting more and more creative control. And I started kind of getting a little bit looser and being able to just play a little bit more with each time. And my friend, actually, Neil Brennan, co-wrote The Female Brain with a lady named Whitney Cummings.
So it was a friend of yours.
They literally wrote a part for me that was like, I didn't know they were going to do this, but they wrote a part for me that was about a professional athlete who was dealing with injuries, and I happen to be, you know, a professional athlete. You know, I've had...
I know this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was, for me, there were, you know, I shot for 3 days. It was an indie film, small indie film that turned out to have a good cast, and it was a chance for me to play somebody else that wasn't really very far from myself. You know what I mean?
Okay. So you're just dipping your toe in it.
I was dipping my toe in, for sure. Cool. But I've done stuff here and there.
All right, good deal. So that it seems like, all right, you know, one of those people. Oh, and yeah, by the way, I'm also a champion wood carver. And right. In 1994, I won the mustache championship of the world. And I'm like, what are you not doing here?
Yeah.
Okay, nonprofit. A lot of professional athletes decide that they're going to do something to help give back. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of things to give back as well. Just I think you have a moral obligation as you become successful to, you know, how do you help people? What did you decide to do as your nonprofit activity and why?
For our nonprofit, my brother and I started the Team Griffin Foundation about 3-4 years ago. And our biggest thing, both my parents are public school teachers in the state of Oklahoma. And if you've kept up or if anybody's heard that last year, not last spring, but the spring before, there was a public school teacher strike in Oklahoma because public school teacher compensation
is terrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
And so my parents did it because they loved helping kids, and they loved, you know, my dad was a basketball coach. I would watch him get up in the morning at 7 a.m., go to school, teach. After school was over, coach basketball, lock up the gym, and then drive kids home, come home, eat, and then work in our we had like an awards come, like a trophy company out of our home. I would watch him do all this every day, you know, go to bed at 2 a.m., and I would watch him, you know, do all these things just because he loved, A, providing for his kids and his family, or helping kids, you know, learn their true worth. Mm-hmm. So our whole foundation is based around helping at-risk youth in Oklahoma, in California, in Michigan, because that's what brings us the most joy, and it's also what brought our parents joy, and we want to kind of continue that legacy.
Nice. Are your parents still around?
They are. They are both live in Oklahoma, and they're doing well.
I grew up in New Mexico, so there's a bit of Oklahoma-New Mexico rivalry.
Right.
The rivalry being for which state could pay its teachers the least.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't know who's winning, but I guess I know who's losing. That's yeah. What I know.
So what do your parents think about this? Like, wow, you know, look at our son today. And okay, fine. Your dad's a basketball coach. Of course, he's going to be like, well, yeah, I'm really pissed off that he's great in basketball.
Yeah.
But about all the other stuff, like, what does your mom say to you when you come home?
My parents are both so supportive. And you know, when I say my dad's a basketball coach, I think a lot of people think that he's doing like, he really forced my brother and I to play basketball. And it was just like this, you know,
like a Bo Eason kind of thing.
Exactly. And it wasn't that way at all. My dad encouraged us. We loved playing sports, and he encouraged us to play all sports and enjoy it. And my parents are just so supportive of everything we do. And I never have to call and feel like, you know, my dad never makes me feel like, oh, you didn't play this way, you didn't do this. He's just supportive. He's just like a friend that, you know, now he's a friend that, you know, is just enjoying the ride with us.
What did he do when you called him the first time and said, I just got signed to be a pro basketball player?
I remember I went to lunch with my parents when I was a freshman in college, and I said, you know, my coach and you know, all these agents are coming around and they're saying that, you know, I could go at this number in the draft. And you know, I remember kind of sharing all that with him and talking with him about it. And then I decided to go back to school for one more year. My brother, who played with me in college, we played together, was going to be a senior. So I wanted to go back for my sophomore year. And I remember, you know, coming out and the next year and telling my parents, like, you know, everybody's going to say I'm going to be the number one pick of the draft. And I think I'm going to do it. And then they were just so supportive. You know what I mean? It wasn't like this moment where we just kind of like, oh, we did it. We made it. It was just like, this is really cool. They had my back. They helped me kind of navigate what I wanted to do. As far as like what agents and all that stuff.
So they were in it with you the whole time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. And so it wasn't sort of like a surprise phone call or anything like that.
No, because they've just, you know, my dad being a basketball coach,
he was in it. Okay.
Outs, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. That's super cool. I want to ask you the anti-aging question because I know people are going to be able to hear when you interview me about stuff on your show. And I'll put a link to that as soon as it shows out, but this episode is going to come out before my episode on your show. We talked a little bit about anti-aging, right? So it's a tough life. You're flying all the time. You know, you're exercising 4 hours a day, which probably isn't an anti-aging strategy. It might be a little bit too much exercise, right?
Absolutely.
So given all the hits you're taking, but all the good stuff you're doing for yourself as well, you roll the dice. How long do you think you're going to live?
Oh, that's a great question. And it's honestly something I've never really, like, you always kind of wonder, you know, what life's going to be like. I think I'd love to see 100.
100?
Love to see 100. I think with like, obviously, modern advancements in technology and health, by the time I get to that age, and also being somebody that's very interested in it, and I can't see myself not being interested in it, especially after I'm done. I would love to see the world at 70 years from now.
All right. That's a good solid answer.
Less ambitious than yours, but yeah.
And you know, you're doing stem cells and you're doing PRP and a lot of the biohacking tech, which I think is going to give you more resilience in your sport and maybe more life than you expect, but
I hope so.
Hundreds a great answer. And the cool thing is for tall guys like us, I guess I'm moderately tall compared to you. You're only like 6 inches taller than I am. Like my neck isn't sore from talking to you. We actually have a disadvantage for living a very long time.
Sure.
Just like, you know, big dogs don't live as long as little dogs.
Right.
The good thing is we can kick the little people if they're in our way. So it balances out.
Exactly. It's fair. Life's fair.
All right, man. It's really been an honor to have you on the show and just to pick your brain and see how you think about things. And I admire your sort of just, you know, put your head down and get it done, humility, and just your ability to pay attention to all these details. You're doing a lot of cool stuff.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. It was a blast talking to you.
And as soon as there's a name for your new show, I'm gonna talk about it right here in this spot. And in the meantime, you guys could probably go to Audible and check out Blake Griffith.
Just type in Blake Griffin. You'll probably find the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So, and your URLs, people can find you. You're so damn famous. I don't have to give people your URL and all that kind of stuff. You got a website, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff, but you have like 10 million followers or something?
Over all social media, I'm not quite sure, but yeah, it's...
like a lot. So anyway, if you can't find him, you probably need to learn how to use Google. I'm just going to say that. So Blake, I truly appreciate your time, your energy, your nonprofit work, and just the renaissance nature of what you're doing. I think you're inspiring more people than you know.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
If you liked today's episode, you know what to do. Head on over to iTunes and just leave a review or pick up a copy of Superhuman if you haven't read it. And then once you get that copy of the book, there's two things that are really important to do. One of them is you got to read it. And then the second thing is you got to go figure out wherever Blake Griffin's social media stuff is, and you got to harass him online about why he's not doing things to live to at least 180. Okay, that's your goal. And if you want to leave a review for his show, for my show, for the book along the way, I would not be offended, but he might be. So there you go. So let's all join together in trolling Blake Griffin about why his goals are so low on anti-aging.
Please do. I want him to be higher.
All right, man. I did my very best.
A Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.